Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.
With Virgin Mobile. Freedom is calling to brighten up your winter mornings. Virgin Mobile. Bring on amazing.
Faith Jones was raised to be part of an elite army preparing for the end times. The cult, which was called the Children of God, became notorious for its, well, it's very alarming sex practices and allegations of abuse and exploitation. Faith survived, and she joins me on the line now for her, from her home in America. Faith, good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, that line is so good. You could be in studio with me. First of all, thank you so much for chatting to me this morning. Can we just start at the very beginning, your childhood? Your grandfather founded a cult called the Children of God. Can you tell me about him and how the cult came to be?
Yeah, so I think, you know, like most cults, they don't think of themselves as cults. It was really my grandfather and his children. They started out in the 60s, 1968. It was in California. And they created, I guess, the beginning of the Jesus People movement, you could call it, mm-hmm. where people, they were gathering young people, hippies, oftentimes those who'd left their homes, and having them join them in their mission, you know, to save the world and to tell people about Jesus and to live like the early disciples did in Acts. So that was their, and then there was also a lot, you know, I mean, it was this the Vietnam War time. So there was a lot of anti-system, anti-the man rhetoric as well. And it began with a very kind of militaristic, I guess you could say.
Okay.
But typically the beliefs were fairly mainstream, other than the dropping out and, you know, leaving all your possessions behind to be missionaries. But then as the group developed, and especially it began to spread overseas, my grandfather moved to England, and then the group began to spread out all over the world. They began to get persecution, as they called it, right? Because the authorities, parents whose kids joined, were not happy about mm-hmm. their kids leaving everything and leaving their families and their jobs and their colleges and running off with this group. It grew and grew.
He went to the UK as well. Wow. That's crazy.
There was very large homes in the UK. So they lived communally.
Okay.
And in Ireland, everywhere. It spread to, you know, 100 countries, over 10,000 members. And I think what really started to disturb people was that my grandfather in the 70s began to get these revelations about, you know, the law of love, that all things are lawful. There's no more Ten Commandments. Anything you do, including sex and polygamous marriages and even, you know, interactions with children, it's all okay as long as it's done in love.
Faith, your parents, how did they meet?
Well, my father, you know, grew up in this himself because, yeah. you know, his father pulled him out of school at the age of 12 and took him on the road preaching in churches. My mother, she left home very young. She was a hippie and a dancer. And she joined when she was like maybe 21, I think. Mm-hmm. And they were actually put together. So my grandfather actually told them to get married. She told my father to take my mother as his second wife.
Okay. How many wives did he have?
Two.
He had two. Okay.
He had two.
Okay. What were your early years like as a child? Can you describe that to me?
So in the book, I wanted to show people what it was like to grow up in this and what it was like to grow up from my perspective as a child.
Yeah.
So I write about it like in the moment, this is what's happening. And at a very early age, you know, we were kind of ripped out of our home and our bed. And we went and moved to this village. We were living in Macau at the time, which is just off the coast of China, right next to Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. Back then it was a Portuguese colony, but we moved to this like tiny Chinese fishing village. We didn't have indoor plumbing. In the middle of nowhere, kind of hiding out from reporters and from people who would know that my father was, you know, the son of the founder of this very notorious group. So we lived on a farm. We did animals and chores, and we had a very regimented kind of schedule. But we were separated from society. We didn't go to school. We were kind of homeschooled. Our whole life was built around God, prayer, worship, service, and the Mo letters, which are these letters that my grandfather wrote, the doctrinal letters, right? The teachings of the doctrine. And as these doctrinal letters began to get really more and more far afield with like the sexual practices, one of them that became very well known was called flirty fishing, where the women, including my mother, would go to bars, like high-end restaurants, and flirt with men, and often sleep with them in an effort to recruit them to Jesus and also to supporting the family with donations. So this led to accusations in many countries of prostitution.
Yeah.
Against the family. And, you know, then there was also, and I write about this, like the accusations of child abuse and like what actually happened in the group and how it was seen, I think, from within the group, from members within the group, how we saw that.
Were you exposed to sex quite early on then in your life?
Very early. I mean, as I write about in the book, I don't remember a time I didn't know what sex was.
Okay.
It was, you know, in the literature, it was in my comics, it was in my coloring books, it was all around me. You know, my mother did a demonstration for me on my father when I was, you know, just a few years old, or, you know, like as educational, basically. And I have my own experiences very young. Fortunately, the practices changed when I was about 10. They actually banned sexual interactions between adults and children in the group because they began to see just kind of the negative impact that this was having on these young people who were growing up and becoming teenagers. And also in the, I guess, the scrutiny of the outside world on them, the group in the UK, there was a big court case in the UK.
So it was seen to be okay to have to abuse children, basically. And you had your own experience. Did you have your own experience of this as a 10-year-old? Is that right?
Well, as a 6-year-old, and then again as a 10-year-old, yes. And I think I write about this. I'm very honest about it and very direct about it in the book because I think it's, you know, this doesn't just happen in cults. So many of us, so many children, so many young women experience sexual abuse, child abuse, some form of sexual assault or another. And these are things that I also experienced later in life in a variety of situations. And I think it's so important for us to bring those things to light and to be honest about them, to talk about what are the underlying causes of these that exist within our society, not just the society of a cult, right? Because the cult was formed by people who came out of regular society and they brought these ideas and concepts with them. And so it's important for us to all look at where do these stem from. And that was the big realization that I came to later in life. So after I left the group and I went to law school and I became a very successful attorney and I was able to look back and reflect and say, what happened? What went wrong? How did these people, including my parents, who were very idealistic, they were very sacrificial. They really believed this doctrine. They believed that they were there to help others and to, you know, and be missionaries and save the world. And, you know, they had these very high ideals and they sacrificed a great deal for them. So how could they get so off track?
So off track.
Allow themselves to
do. I mean,
you know,
your mother,
terrible things.
Your mother didn't shield you from this or protect you.
No. And I think it depended on, you know, there was different things that happened because there were communities, right? You lived in these homes with other families, and to some extent they were quite independent. So, you know, different people had different experiences within the group. Some people I know didn't experience it, or maybe they were born a bit later into the group, or their parents maybe shielded them more. Others had, you know, much worse or more extensive experiences with these types of things, but they didn't see it as bad. And
Yeah.
that's really the crazy part, right?
That is crazy. And also, you as a 6-year-old, as a 10-year-old, did you know at the time this was wrong? I mean, how were you feeling at the time, or was it only when you came out of the cult that you reflected and thought, that was wrong, what happened to me? How were you feeling at the time? How is 10-year-old Faith feeling when this was happening to her?
So that's why I wrote it, because I didn't know it was wrong. Everything I was told was that this was right and this was fine and this was okay. But inside, I had a sense that no, I don't like this. You know, this is gross. There's something wrong with this, right? And for a very small child to have that internal sense when everything like I'm being told around me is like saying this is okay, this is fine. I think that goes to show that we all have this kind of internal barometer that can help us see things even in very difficult situations where we may not have maybe the moral code. You know, there's a certain sense that we all have of this right within our body. And that's really what I talk about in the long run. That was what I came to, this kind of revelation that I had about what was the core of what went wrong in that group.
And your education, because you moved around a lot, and you were homeschooled. Did you have any kind of an education?
The family was quite good. They were called the Children of God and the family. They changed their name multiple times. So you know, later they were called the family, so I refer to them as that. They were generally very good at early education. So kids learned to read very young, 1, 2 years old. But anything past like basic elementary school, we weren't really taught. I mean, we were taught to read, write, do arithmetic, grammar. But at kind of a basic elementary school level. And that was just deemed to be what you needed to get by in the world, but you weren't going to have a job because they didn't have jobs. We lived off of donations. And, you know, your purpose in life was to be a missionary, and the world was going to end in a few years, anyways, because, you know, the Great Tribulation was there and the Antichrist was about to show up and Jesus was going to return in the rapture. So I didn't actually really expect to grow up. I didn't think I would make it past being a teenager. And so we didn't prepare. We didn't prepare financially. Nobody had property. It was all given to the group, right? And nobody prepared you for the outside world, for living outside. So I didn't get really an education. But there was a point where my mother, we became accidentally excommunicated outside of the group. It was just a long story, which you'd have to read. It's actually quite interesting about sort of the manipulation that happens. But that was the first time I came to America for a short period of time when I was 12, and experienced like an actual classroom setting, staying with my grandmother in the US. And I was like, wow, this is school. Oh my goodness. And that experience drove me to want to get an education because I saw that my mother, you know, couldn't support us. I mean, we were just in desperate circumstances. I was begging for money in a parking lot just to feed my family, you know, in a camper. So that, like, I was like, okay, I need to finish high school at least. So I actually put myself through high school with a correspondence course after we went back to Macau. As a young teenager,
Faith, is that how you got out of the group?
I didn't get out of the group until later. I was in my early 20s, but it was education that actually pulled me out of the group. It was a love of, I talk about in the book, I talk about, because we weren't allowed outside reading. So I talk about my very first novel was The Secret Garden. And somebody was throwing it away because we weren't supposed to have this like bad outside influence. And when I got it and I read it and I was hiding in the loft reading it, it just transported me to this whole other world. And after that, I began to like, whenever I could, sneak books and read books and novels. And, you know, that just, I think that helped open me up to this outside world. And it got to a point where I just couldn't do it anymore.
You Did know, you just up and leave round. One day?
No, it took actually a long time for me to make the decision to leave. And because that was all I knew, right? I mean, we were taught that this was the highest honor of serving God. And if you left, you were a backslider and you were, you know, God was going to punish you. And there's all this sort of stuff, you know, and also like for most people, they didn't have an education. We didn't really have much way to raise money, to earn money. So it was quite hard to leave. And so it took me quite some time to make the decision psychologically. And once I made it, then, you know, I mean, we didn't have any money. We were out raising money, selling cassettes and CDs and posters and singing on the street and stuff. But we didn't get to keep any of it. That all went to the home. So when I left, I barely had anything, you know? And so then like, how did I get a job? How did I get enough money to buy a plane ticket to come to America to actually, you know, go visit relatives? And, you know, it's just, that's that whole story of how do you get out of something like that?
Did you rely
on something that's such a difficult situation?
Did you rely on family members outside of the cult to help you, break free?
You know, I had hoped I could more. They definitely gave me some, like maybe emotional support. Mm-hmm. It was more of, it was really something you had to do. You had to do it on your own.
Yeah. I mean, and you certainly did. Wow.
That was just it, you know? I mean, I had relatives that encouraged me, I think, to do that. You know, and an aunt that helped me with a place to stay when I first left. So that helped, you know, that helped me to get out. But I didn't know I was going to have any of that when I left. I had to make the decision to go and, you know, without any of that backup.
How old were you when you finally got out?
It was just after my 23rd birthday.
Okay. And what are your feelings towards your parents now?
My parents and I actually have a good relationship now. And, you know, they left too. They left not necessarily at the same time, and it took them, I think, many years before they were able to recognize a lot of the things that had been wrong, right? And, but using the framework that I created, right, I guess call them the 10 principles of conduct, or people call it the I own me framework, is enabled us to have these deep conversations about what happened and what went wrong in the group and what the violations were. And it helps make those things more clear, even to them. So we've actually grown closer in the last years than we were. And
a lot of therapy.
You know, that
a lot of therapy sessions.
I did a lot of self work, I guess you could say, self help work. I did some therapy. I found that there were other people, certain coaches and other things that were actually more helpful. But a lot of it actually was really when I came to these realizations and understanding that helped clarify for me what had gone wrong. But I really do believe you have to do the work, the healing work, to get to a place where you are, where you can just be happy and get on with your life and forgive.
You talk about it. Yeah. And forgive you. Well, fair play to you. I don't know how anybody can get over something like that. You've done a lot of work on yourself, in all aspects of your life. Does this group still exist? Is there still a community like this?
It was mostly disbanded, I think, in 2010. I honestly didn't follow it. I mean, when I left, I left.
You were gone.
I just put it behind me, you know?
But you'd such a, like, your life now is so different, Faith. How do you adapt to doing normal things like making friends or holding down a job and living a life away from a cult?
Yeah, that's the hardest part, really, is it was just adapting to an entirely new culture. Everything, you know, was new. There were so many, like, in the book, you know, there's kind of a lot of, to me, there's a lot of funny stories as well as, like, the difficult and painful ones, because that's what real life is like. You know, there's the good and the bad. There's the tragic and the sort of hilarious, right? And so that was my experience. You know, there was just a lot of crazy things that it was hard for me to adapt to. But, you know, this was 20 years ago. And, you know, so it's
time.
Yeah, it's time. You learn a whole new process. You create a whole new framework for life and for the world. And that's, you know, that's what you have to do for yourself. It didn't happen instantly. It takes work.
How is your life now?
My life is wonderful now. I mean, I became a very successful attorney. I worked for Skadden Arps in Los Angeles and Hong Kong, doing international M&A deals. After that, I left. Now I have my own law practice. I've written 2 books. I'm creating a whole other
story.
I've created a whole other story. I have good friends. You know, it's like you just, I did a lot of work because I knew I didn't want to be miserable. I didn't want to be one of those angry, bitter people looking back on their life and saying, you know, if I only had, or, you know. So to me, I took responsibility for my life. I said, this is my life. This is my happiness. I don't care what happened to me in the past. It's just, you know, I choose what I'm going to do for me now. And whatever it takes to do the work to get where I want to be, whether that's emotionally, you know, whether that's in my relationships, whether that's with my work, with that my money, with my income, that's where I want to go. And one of the things that I'm working on right now, which I think is one of the critical pieces, right? So the first part is the principles that I outlined, which is really it's the core of our ethical system or moral code, which is what we didn't have in the group. We didn't have an objective sense of, you know, if you violate this, that is abuse, that is wrong. So they could believe when their religious leader and their guru, right, my grandfather, was telling them all of this stuff and backing it up with interpretations of the scripture, and could pull them in to his web of believing that this was true, that these actions were okay, these violations. And it wasn't just violations of children. It was, you know, separating families. It was taking everybody's possessions. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, the coercion of women to have sex with men they didn't want to have sex with, which happened to me as a teenager. So even when you were already of age, right, when you were past the age of consent, you were still in this kind of coercive environment. And so just recognizing that what went so far off was they took away our sense of self-ownership. They said, you don't own yourself.
Yeah.
Right. That was the core. That was how they could get people to subject themselves to this abuse and to engage in it. Because if you didn't own yourself, then you had to do what God said. And here we are the leader and we're telling you what God wants you to do. So they could divorce themselves from a sense of a moral code, right? Well, I'm just doing what I'm told. This is what God wants, right? And that's how they were led down that path. So beginning with the very core principle of I own myself, right? And then all of the steps that logically follow from that, that's what I created. And that's what I talk about in my TEDx talk, which is called I Own Me, is that this very simple and beautiful few principles that really we all know. It's not like these are any big surprise, but just kind of clarifying them in a way that is so simple that even a child could understand it.
My God, Faith Jones, you have come a long way. You've done phenomenal work. It is an extraordinary story and just a real insight into human resilience. Sex Cult Nun, it's out now. Faith Jones, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. And best of luck with everything you do, okay?
Thank you.
Bye, love. Bye.
Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.